Iran says the prosecution of those involved in the U.S. assassination of General Soleimani is a top priority in security cooperation between Tehran and Baghdad. Russian President Vladimir Putin makes a surprise visit to Mariupol, his first trip to the Ukrainian city since it was captured by Russia. And French police clash with protesters in Paris and Nantes amid anger at the government's decision to push through its pension reform bill. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Good to have you with us. Now, Tehran says that the prosecution of those involved in the U.S. assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani is a top priority in security cooperation between Tehran and Baghdad. Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, made the announcement in an official visit to Iraq. He said passage of time should not reduce the significance of the assassination. He added that the U.S. continues to destabilize the region through its mischievous acts that he described as something intolerable which should be ended. Now, for his part, Secretary of Iraq's National Security, Qasem al-Urouji, said that Baghdad is committed to a parliamentary legislation which calls for all foreign forces to be expelled from Iraq. He said that major parts of the legislation have been already implemented. The Iranian official is in Iraq for talks on bilateral security cooperation. Tens of thousands of people have hit the streets of Tel Aviv for the 11th consecutive week against the policies of new Israeli far-right cabinet. Now, similar rallies took place in Haifa, Al-Quds, Beersheba, and hundreds of other towns and cities across the occupied Palestinian territories. Protesters are angry at Prime Minister Netanyahu's proposed judicial reforms. If approved, the legislation would increase the cabinet's influence in picking judges and would limit the powers of the Supreme Court to overturn the cabinet's decisions. Critics argue that legal changes will foster corruption and bring diplomatic isolation. The reforms are the cornerstone of Netanyahu's cabinet, an alliance of ultra-Orthodox and extreme right parties, which took office in late December. The deputy chief of Hamas says the Palestinian resistance movement will file a lawsuit against Israel in the International Criminal Court. Musa Abu Marzouk says the regime must be held to account for its war crimes against Palestinians. Abu Marzouk pointed to the four Israeli wars on the Gaza Strip and desecration of the Palestinian holy sites, demolition of their homes, and confiscation of their lands. These, he said, constitute war crimes that should be prosecuted. Marzouk was addressing a conference against occupation. The regime has recently intensified crackdown on Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. The violence has left 89 Palestinians dead so far this year. Representatives of Arab parties from different countries have arrived in the Syrian capital. They met with President Bashar al-Assad and held an emergency meeting of the General Conference of Arab Parties. Our correspondent, Damascus Mohamed Ali, has the details.
Syrian President Bashar al-Assad received heads of Arab political parties who arrived in Damascus to hold an emergency meeting of the General Conference of Arab Parties. Assad said there is currently an opportunity for political parties to take action in resisting the siege imposed on the countries they represent, underlining the importance of dialogue in expanding the conference to include various political movements and forces. Head of the conference, Qasem Saleh, expressed solidarity with Syrians affected by the earthquakes. Members of the delegation called for ending the occupation of Syrian lands, lifting the U.S. economic siege, and activating joint Arab action.
We can convey to President Assad our stances and listen to his advices for activating joint Arab action and the role of youth. We are betting on the youth at this stage for finding creative solutions for political, economic, and social challenges.
Representatives of parties then held the 63rd emergency meeting of the General Conference of Arab Parties. They underlined the importance of respecting Syria's sovereignty and unity and rejected unilateral economic sanctions on Syria. They asserted that resistance blocked the implementation of a colonialist plot in the region that aimed at eliminating the Palestinian cause and defeating Syria.
We unconditionally stand with Syrian people, army and leadership, which paid a heavy price to defend just Arab causes. Syria is the source of our history and civilizations. Arab states should return to Syria.
What happens in Syria affects Lebanon and vice versa. We entered into Syria at a particular time in support of its leadership, army, and people. We came to Syria to defend Lebanon. If Syria had collapsed, the whole region would have collapsed. Even Iran's support to Syria was aimed at defending Iran because Syria was the first defense line of all resistance forces in the region.
Participants rejected all forms of normalization with Israel. They welcomed the restoration of diplomatic relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia, underlining it would greatly contribute to solving regional problems.
The conference is being held at a time Syrians are extremely suffering from the repercussions of a foreign-backed conflict, unilateral sanctions, and most recently, the devastating earthquake. It's a wake-up call to the international community to take urgent actions and help resolve Syria's dilemmas. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
A pro-Syria sit-in has been held in Italian capital Rome and a number of capitals across the world as part of a campaign called End the Siege. The initiative was in solidarity with the Syrian people who are suffering from the sanctions imposed on their country by the West.
On Saturday, sit-ins were held in several countries across the world as part of a campaign aimed at denouncing the devastating effects of the sanctions imposed by the U.S. and the European Union on Syria. The initiative, named End the Siege, has been joined by organizations based in a dozen countries, including Jordan, Palestine, Lebanon, the U.K., Germany and Canada. Italy's sit-in was held in Rome in front of the Colosseum, where members of the No War Network and the U.S. Citizens for Peace and Justice denounced how U.S. and EU sanctions have devastated Syria's economy and led to immense human suffering.
Syria is greatly suffering the consequences of the criminal sanctions imposed by our governments, particularly after the earthquake that hit that country over a month ago. Frustration about being excluded from assistance is growing, and I believe it is a scandal that the EU can't act independently, but it has to always submit to the US diktat.
Demonstrators at the sit-in said that the US must leave Syria and stop profiting from Syrian oil and wheat that has exacerbated the poverty in the country. Italy and Syria once maintained a robust relationship, but in 2012, 1 year after the Syrian conflict, Rome joined its Western allies in closing its embassy in Damascus. 7 years later, in 2019, when Italy had an anti-establishment government under the leadership of the Five Star Movement and the Northern League, it appeared that Rome was mulling over normalizing relations with Damascus and reopening its embassy there. However, something went wrong.
It happened that the then government was under enormous pressure, particularly by the United States. Everybody knows that Italy is a country with limited sovereignty. Washington demanded Rome to stop liaising with Damascus the same way it has forced Italy to join the war in Ukraine. One third of Syria is today occupied by American soldiers, and the U.S.'s thefts of Syrian oil, natural gas, and other mineral resources have led to energy shortages.
We're here today because this is the 20th anniversary of the invasion and occupation of Iraq by United States troops. They still have a NATO contingent. 1,000 Italian troops are leading the contingent to rob the oil from northeast Iraq, impoverish the Iraqis, and send the oil to Turkey, Israel, and clients of the United States.
The February 6th earthquake has further worsened the already deteriorating economy and humanitarian situation in Syria. According to UN sources, even before the earthquake tragedy, 70% of the population needed humanitarian assistance due to the war in the country and the US-EU sanctions. Max Civili, Rome.
The Russian president has made a surprise visit to Mariupol, his first trip to the Ukrainian city since it was captured after a lengthy siege at the start of the Russia-Ukraine war. Vladimir Putin flew to Mariupol by helicopter and took a tour of the city. He visited several sites and spoke to the residents. Putin's stop in Mariupol comes after his surprise visit to Crimea to mark the 9th anniversary of the peninsula's annexation. The trips came after an arrest warrant was issued for Putin by the International Criminal Court over Russia's alleged deportation of thousands of Ukrainian children. The Kremlin has dismissed as void the validity of the warrant. The political analyst Tim Kirby says the Russian president's unannounced visit to the captured Ukrainian city Mariupol shows his strength amid the ongoing war with Ukraine.
Well, it's definitely a show of strength if you look at it from one standpoint, because it means he wasn't afraid to fly by helicopter somewhat on the edge of the war zone. Now, we have to remember that if we watch the news, I'm not a military expert, but I can tell you that Donetsk continues to get hit by the Ukrainians. Mariupol does not. So Mariupol seems to be either slightly outside their range or outside their scope of operations. And that's one of the reasons why the reconstruction works are taking place there so rapidly, because apparently they're not going to be knocked right back down again. So although it's a bit outside of the true danger zone, it is definitely a risky maneuver, especially if certain three-letter organizations from the West have good access to Russian information. So it's definitely a show that the president is not afraid to travel to the Donbass to get close to the war zone, even by helicopter. So we could interpret it that way.
The Kosovo blamed Serbia for the failure to sign a landmark EU broker deal to normalize relations.
The other side, just as in the last meeting in Brussels on 27th of February, is avoiding signing the agreement, now also with the annex. It is now up to the European Union to find the mechanism to make the status of this agreement legally and internationally binding.
Now, Albin Kurti made the comments after a trilateral meeting with a Serbian counterpart and EU foreign policy chief in North Macedonia. Serbian president also said that both sides have reached some sort of agreement, but the implementation of the plan will definitely have to be upgraded. The EU has described negotiations as difficult. Last month, Kosovo and Serbia agreed to a deal to normalize relations following nearly 10 years of EU-mediated talks. French police have clashed with protesters for the third straight day as anger is mounting over President Macron's pension reforms. Rallies were held in several cities across the country. In the capital of Paris, police banned protests outside Parliament after gatherings there. While the two previous nights led to clashes between demonstrators and security forces. On Thursday, Macron invoked a controversial executive power to force through a bill on the state pension age without a parliamentary vote. The move also angered a political class, presenting the 45-year-old leader one of his biggest challenges less than a year into his second final mandate. Opposition lawmakers have filed two motions of no confidence in the government, which are to be debated in Parliament on Monday. Now, John Ross, a senior fellow from Changyang Institute at Renmin University of China, says the French government prefers to use its money to support the war in Ukraine rather than deal with its internal problems.
At the present time, the French government is finding huge sums of money in order to give them to Ukraine for weapons, but it wants to raise the retirement age in France. And also, I mean, that they can impose taxes on energy companies and other things. It's absolutely not justified. I mean, not to mention, of course, the way that's been rammed through without any vote in Parliament. So he's scarcely surprising that huge numbers of people are taken to the streets. French government, he is pressing ahead with it. I mean, because, well, for two reasons. One is because he can't be re-elected for a third term. Therefore, he doesn't really care what are the consequences of it from the point of his own personal popularity. And also because the French capital, French political establishment, has decided that at the present time they are not going to stand up to the types of problems which are existing in Europe at the present time. They're not going to try to seek an end to the war in Ukraine. They're not going to attempt to stop the US destabilizing the world economy through its inflationary stimulus packages. Instead, they're going to load this onto the population of France. I mean, it's the same type of thing, only in France.
Kazakhstan's holding snap parliamentary elections. 12 million people are eligible to vote. 7 political parties are participating. Independent candidates are allowed to run for the first time in nearly 2 decades. A 30% quota has also been introduced for women, young people, and people with disabilities. President Kasym-Jomart Tokayev dissolved parliament in January and announced the early vote as part of what has been called a modernization drive. The decision was made following last year's deadly protests against fuel prices. Critics accuse the Central Asian country's president of trying to consolidate power by such reforms. At least 13 people have been killed in a strong earthquake that jolted a coastal region in southern Ecuador. According to the government, the 6.8 magnitude earthquake left 11 people dead in the province of El Oro and 2 fatalities elsewhere. It said that multiple homes, educational buildings, and health centers were also damaged. The quake also shook Peru. Authorities there said that it was felt in the country's northern region, claiming the life of a 4-year-old girl. North Korea has fired another missile amid rising tensions over joint war games by South Korea and the United States. Seoul says its military has detected one short-range ballistic missile launched toward the Sea of Japan. The South says its military is maintaining its full readiness in coordination with the U.S. Japan also says that the North has possibly fired a ballistic missile. This is the 4th time in a week that North Korea has tested a missile. Tensions have been running high in the Korean Peninsula as Pyongyang keeps testing missiles and regards Washington and Seoul joint military exercises as a rehearsal for war. Okay, and with this we come to the end of this broadcast.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Here is a part of a speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, after planting saplings on the occasion of Tree Planting Day on March 23. A few years ago, a number of people wrote a letter recommending that fruit trees should be planted. So we planted fruit trees. This year, some experts and experienced individuals pointed out that non-bearing trees, forest trees, and various other trees that have wood as their fruit, these are also important for the country. What they said is absolutely correct. My advice to everyone is that in addition to fruit trees, they should also plant forest trees, the trees that have important wood, both for using the wood inside the country and also for trading wood products, which is also an important issue. We need to make use of all the economic possibilities that are available to us in our country. When a country is dependent on just one product, this will result in what you see today. We have a problem today. We have a problem in the value of our national currency and also with inflation and high prices.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today. And that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Our officials should use every economic opportunity at their disposal. Of course, they are working hard. I can see that they are putting in effort. God willing, they will continue these endeavors with strength. And they will find and implement the right solution to solve people's economic problems. We are one of the few countries that have included environmental protection in our constitution. In our constitution, preservation of the environment has been stipulated. This is an important matter. No one should violate this law. This is one of the outstanding features of our constitution. I hope that, God willing, the people will be successful and our officials will be successful with God's grace in carrying out the necessary work that we all have a responsibility to do. I will also like to briefly talk about an issue that has been taking place recently, and that is the issue of, some are saying, the poisoning of students. I'm well aware that our officials have sat together and discussed this issue. They are working hard, and they have specified duties. I want to emphasize that they must earnestly investigate this matter. This is an important issue.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me.
Fires in Greece Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The United States has suffered some of its biggest bank failures since 2008. Silicon Valley Bank, the 16th largest bank in the U.S., failed after depositors hurried to withdraw money over concerns of a liquidity crisis. Officials say they acted to protect insured depositors. Regulators have taken control of the lender's deposit and transferred the assets to a newly created entity. Nearly half of the American technology and healthcare companies that went public last year after getting early funding from venture capital firms were Silicon Valley Bank customers. Moreover, a large number of startups will not be able to make payroll at some point in the next month if they cannot access their money. The lender had been under pressure lately due to fears of recession, higher interest rates, and a slowdown in the market for initial public offerings. The factors had made it harder for startups to raise additional cash. But Silicon Valley Bank was not the only U.S. financial institution to fail. Following the collapse of SVB, customers withdrew more than $10 billion in deposits from New York-based Signature Bank. Regulators have now said that Signature was taken over to protect its depositors and the stability of the U.S. financial system. Signature had 40 branches, assets of $110.36 billion, and deposits of $88.59 billion at the end of 2022. Signature Bank was founded in 2001 as a more business-friendly alternative to the big banks. It expanded to the West Coast and then opened itself to the crypto industry in 2018.
Signature Bank is a business mostly bank with actually pretty good deposits relative to lending. And it closed mainly because I think the same thing we're seeing across the banking industry, sort of a psychology of investors losing faith in the credit quality of banking in general.
And there are a lot of red flags here. That's certainly one of them, the concentration in one industry. The explosive growth over the last year, they literally doubled in size from 100 some odd billion to over 200 billion in assets, catapulting them into one of the largest size echelon of banks in the U.S. They also had a very, as they say in the banking world and accounting, they had a very mismatched portfolio.
The bank failures have sparked fears of contagion in the financial sector, not only in the United States, but also in other countries. Bank shares in the US, Asia, and Europe have slumped following the collapse of SVB and Signature Bank. Investors have started to worry about the general state of the banking sector. Smaller US lenders were particularly hard hit. Investors are concerned that the failures are a sign of troubles at other firms. Several pension funds in the US and at least two overseas have lost millions of dollars due to the crisis. Institutions such as the California Public Employees Retirement Fund, the California State Teachers Retirement System, Korea's National Pension Service, and Sweden's Elective Pension Fund had reportedly invested in SVB. Analysts believe Silicon Valley Bank's collapse is likely to be felt across the technology landscape globally over the coming years.
But, you know, you also have the question of the impact on the financial technology and research and development, venture capital industries in the United States. There's $160 billion potentially tied up in this receivership that the venture capital industry could lose.
Governments in the United Kingdom and the United States have taken extraordinary steps to stop a potential banking crisis. The UK Treasury and the Bank of England have announced that they had facilitated the sale of SVB UK to HSBC, Europe's biggest bank, ensuring the security of £6.7 billion of deposits. President Biden has also pledged stiffer bank regulations, forcing regulators to step in with a series of emergency measures.
Americans can rest assured that our banking system is safe. Your deposits are safe. Let me also assure you, we will not stop at this. We'll do whatever is needed.
The crisis has underscored the risks to banks from the end of easy money. Global borrowing costs have risen as the Federal Reserve lifted U.S. rates by 450 basis points from near zero. The European Central Bank hiked the Eurozone's by 300. There are concerns that price inflation will stay high, something that would drive further rate hikes.
Tensions between the U.S. and Russia have risen to unprecedented levels after Washington accused Moscow of colliding with one of its Reaper surveillance drones, forcing it to crash into the Black Sea waters off Crimea. Russia denied it deliberately brought the unmanned aerial vehicle down. Moscow says the drone went down after stalling and never came into contact with another aircraft. Russia says the UAV was flying towards the Russian border without an active transponder, in clear violation of the restricted area established for the conduct of the special military operation. Two interceptors were dispatched to investigate. As a result of sharp maneuvers, the MQ-9 unmanned aerial vehicle went into uncontrolled flight, lost altitude, and collided with the water surface. The Russian fighters did not use weapons, did not come into contact with the UAV, and returned safely to their home base. That's what the Russian Defense Ministry stated. But the U.S. has rejected Russia's explanation, accusing Russian jets of an unsafe and unprofessional intercept of the drone. U.S. military officials claimed their spy drone was operating in international airspace when a pair of Su-27 jets appeared, sprayed it with fuel, and struck the propeller of the UAV, which caused it to crash into the sea.
But there is a pattern of behavior recently where there is a little bit more aggressive actions being conducted by the Russians. We haven't completed our analysis as to why that's happening. And it wasn't just involving us. There were some incidents earlier with the British and some other nations as well.
The U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has already reached out to his Russian counterpart, Sergei Shoigu, to discuss the incidents. The last time Shoigu and Austin spoke was in October 2022. The latest incident has further strained the already tense relations between the two nations.
I just got off the phone with my Russian counterpart, Minister Shoigu. As I've said repeatedly, it's important that great powers be models of transparency and communication. And the United States will continue to fly and to operate wherever international law allows. And it is incumbent upon Russia to operate its military aircraft in a safe and professional manner.
The Kremlin said on Wednesday that relations with the U.S. were in a lamentable state and at their lowest level. Calls are already growing loud in the U.S. to retaliate against Russia. Hawkish Republican Senator Lindsey Graham has suggested opening fire on Russian fighter jets that intercept U.S. drones.
They shot down our drone. What should our answer be?
Well, we should hold them accountable and say that if you ever get near another U.S. set flying in international waters, your airplane would be shot down. What would Ronald Reagan do right now? He would start shooting Russian planes down if they were threatening our assets.
Russia's ambassador to the U.S., Anatoly Antonov, said the senator's call to shoot down Russian aircraft went far beyond common sense and risked all-out war between the world's largest nuclear powers. Since Russia started the military operation in eastern Ukraine, contact between American and Russian military leaders has been limited. Meanwhile, Italy's foreign minister, Antonio Tajani, has said that the drone crash represents a moment of great tension in relations between Moscow and Washington. He also urged the West and Russia to exercise caution so that they could avoid a direct clash. The crisis comes as the war is still raging on in eastern Ukraine. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has said Russian forces must be stopped in Bakhmut and other towns in the east. Russia has said the capturing of Bakhmut opens a path to taking control of the entire Donetsk region, one of its central war aims.
Wagner PMC units have practically surrounded Bakhmut. Only one road is left open to Ukrainian forces. The pincers are getting tighter. If earlier the professional Ukrainian army fought with us, today we see more and more old people and children.
Russian forces and fighters from Wagner Group have captured Bakhmut's east, but have apparently failed to encircle the city. NATO also warned last week that Bakhmut could fall within a matter of days.
China's President Xi Jinping has pledged to bolster the country's security and build the military into a great wall of steel to defend Beijing's interests.
So as to guarantee a new development pattern through a new security architecture, we should further advance our mobilization drive in terms of national defense and military, and to turn China's military into a great wall of steel that will effectively defend the country's sovereignty, security, and development interests.
He also stressed the need for an improved national security system as well as an improved social governance system.
Security is the foundation for development. Stability is the prerequisite for prosperity. We should implement a holistic approach to national security and improve our national security system, strengthen our capacity for safeguarding national security, and enhance public safety governance, as well as to improve the social governance system.
He also reiterated Beijing's opposition to secessionist activities and external interference in Taiwan. Xi's remarks came in his closing speech to China's parliament, the National People's Congress, where last week he secured unanimous support for an unprecedented third term in office. During his speech, Xi also said China must achieve greater self-resilience and strength in science and technology, a call that comes as the United States blocks China's access to chip-making equipment and other cutting-edge technologies. Meanwhile, China's premier has said some people in the U.S. have been trumpeting decoupling from China in recent years.
I know that in recent years, some in the United States have been trumpeting the idea of decoupling from China, and sometimes it could become quite a hot topic on the media. But I wonder how many people can truly benefit from this kind of hype. According to Chinese statistics, two-way trade between China and the United States last year totaled $760 billion, which again set a new record in history.
Qiang said China and the United States can and must cooperate, and there are a lot that the two countries can achieve by working together. He stressed that encirclement and suppression are in no one's interests. The latest remarks by Xi Jinping regarding China's focus on security comes as relations with the U.S. have hit their lowest point in decades. Chinese officials had previously warned that Washington's efforts to contain Beijing's interests could lead to conflict and confrontation between the two superpowers. America's increasingly confrontational posture toward China is a significant shift in the U.S. foreign policy that needs greater scrutiny and debate. For most of the past half century, the United States sought to reshape China through economic and diplomatic engagement. In the case of the Trump administration, through economic and diplomatic disengagement. The Biden administration, by contrast, has shelved the idea that China can be changed in favor of the hope that it can be checked. The White House has moved to limit economic ties with China, to limit China's access to technology with military applications, to pull back from international institutions where the United States has long sought to engage China, and to strengthen ties with China's neighbors. In recent months, the United States has restricted semiconductor exports to China, and this week it moved ahead with plans to help Australia obtain nuclear submarines. The administration also is seeking to impose new restrictions on American investments in certain Chinese companies. In treating China as a growing threat to American interests, it is acting with broad support, including from leading Republicans, much of the military and foreign policy establishments, and a growing portion of the business community. China also is demonstrating a greater willingness to engage in worrying provocations, mounting military displays in the South China Sea and Taiwan Strait. China and the U.S. have locked themselves into a new cycle of recriminations, provoking fresh worries that the world's two biggest economies are heading down a path that could one day lead to the once unthinkable, the possibility of open conflict. The dueling narratives brought into focus how the U.S. and China increasingly have one thing in common, a growing distrust of the other side. Even worse, the escalating rhetoric is entrenching divisions that could make it harder for both sides to find a way to coexist peacefully over the long term.
In an utter disregard for the public, the French Senate has voted in favor of President Emmanuel Macron's unpopular pension reforms plan, bringing the package one more step toward becoming a law. 195 members of the upper house of the French parliament voted for the legislation with 112 against. That amid days-long nationwide protests against the move. The plan, which aims to raise the retirement age from 62 to 64, has drawn hundreds of thousands, sometimes millions, out to the streets or walk out from their jobs across France. The protests and rolling strikes have affected refineries, public transport and garbage collections with the aim to pressure the government to withdraw the plan. Macron has argued that the procedure is essential to ensure the pension system does not run out of money. His cabinet members have praised the reforms. In a tweet, Prime Minister Elizabeth Warren wrote, "It is a key step to make a reform happen that will guarantee the future of our pension system." Now that the Senate has adopted the bill, it will be reviewed by a joint committee of lower and upper house lawmakers. If approved, the plan will be put to vote in the country's National Assembly later this week. That's where the government needs a majority to sign the bill into law. If the government fails to assemble a majority, Prime Minister Warren could deploy a highly controversial constitutional tool known as Article 49(3) to push the legislation through without a vote. Elizabeth Warren has repeatedly said she wants to avoid resorting to the 49(3) procedure, but she might have no other option if there is a real risk of not having enough votes. The possibility of using Article 49(3) comes as many unionists have already warned President Macron against forcing the parliament by pushing the text through without a vote from MPs of the National Assembly. Secretary General of the French CFDT Union Laurent Berger says using 49(3) would be very dangerous as it risks creating a great degree of bitterness. French unions have called for an 8th round of nationwide demonstrations on the day of voting to keep up the pressure on the government and the parliament. The opponents of the plan argue that it would penalize low-skilled workers who start their careers early while reducing their right to leisure and a long retirement at the end. Many appear ready to fight for a better work-life balance after years of being pushed to work harder. But for many others, raising their retirement age feels like the last straw. For some others, it is a red line. According to government figures, nearly 1.3 million people took to the streets Tuesday last week to vent their anger, making it the highest turnout since the start of the protest movement. The figure is indicative of the fact that the French are showing signs of burnout and a change in attitude towards the workplace. Jean Jaurès Foundation researchers found that although 60% of the French rated their job as really important in their lives in 1990, only 21% did so in October 2022. Moreover, 60% of the French say they would rather earn less and have more free time, which is itself a sign of frustration among the French public about the jobs they're working. If this trend continues to persist, no one would guess what economic repercussions will be waiting for the French society soon. From a different perspective, this frustration with the workplace clashes with the president who pitched himself as a candidate at work. For Macron, however, there is a lot at stake. Failure to reform pensions would tarnish the rest of his second and final term and stop his reformist passion dead in his tracks. On the other hand, the growing discontent with the establishment would be something the government would not want to deal with ever.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad, praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. You're on to IRIB English Radio. And as my brother Muzaffar here in the studio would say, choo-choo-choo-choo-choo, what is it?
Yeah, that's it, my man. You're getting into the rhythm of it. That's
Muzaffar
it.
In the studio with me. And so, choo-choo-choo-choo-choo, let's go.
I love it. Santum, thank you.
Yeah, so this is the Youth Station and maturity. That's, I think, our topic for today.
Right after saying that slogan, we're talking about maturity.
Was that a mature thing I just did?
No. I think maturity, part of maturity at least, is to know when it's okay to crack a joke.
Yeah,
right.
That's true.
I think some of the worst moments in our childhood was when we were being told off. You might not have experienced this because I think you're a good boy, right?
But my parents struggled, man.
Okay. It's usually the bad kids who turn into good kids later on. Sometimes. But when you're being told off really badly by your teacher or by your parent or an auntie or an uncle, and you are fighting with all your energy and strength not to burst out laughing.
Oh. The signs of maturity.
We don't talk about mental maturity, right?
Yeah, sure. You find a person with beard. You find a person with good height in an adult age range. Can you say that person is mature?
No, come on.
How do you find out a person?
Have you seen me? How do you find out?
Or let me rephrase it and put it in a more fascinating way. You're now going for a proposal. Let's say we're single.
Oh.
We're going for a proposal.
Mm.
How do you know that person, girl or boy, let's keep it in both situations, is mature enough for you or not?
You would have to start a conversation with them, I think.
Mm-hmm. So it's something beyond physiological.
Yeah. See, when we're talking about immaturity here, I think a big part of immaturity is jahiliyyah, and a specific type of jahiliyyah that we refer to as jahl murakkab, I believe, right? And that's the compound ignorance. And that's where a person not only doesn't know, but they don't know that they don't know. To strike up an example of that, you'd have to start a conversation with somebody and start discussing about various different subjects. And see if they are interested in subjects that they don't have knowledge about. For me, I'd say that that's a kind of test of maturity. Priorities, I'd say.
Yeah.
The things which are important and the things which are very trivial and you should be able to let go of them.
Exactly.
And I think that that strikes a bigger chord with us as well, because we experience in our lives so often that somebody who you expect to be that mature, sensible person actually is holding lots of hatred, for example, or grudges in their heart, and they're keeping a lot of pent-up emotions against other people, and you're thinking, why? And then, you know, it happens a lot in Indo-Pak.
You know how I know whether a person is mature enough? I see what's big for them. What's so big for them? What's trivial for them? What's trivial
nice,
for them?
Yeah.
Like, is it big for them if they do if they were involved in a car accident, or is it trivial for them if they lose? For example, me at least I can say during my ayamul jahiliya, during the days of my ignorance, it was trivial for me for my father to take away my computer for a week, and he did once to train me. But then I'm like a tech guy. I'm like a geek in the class.
Right, right.
And me being away from my gadgets was a big deal. Mm-hmm. That was trivial for me. But then when you look at the people around you, I think the best test that I can have, I either travel with them, I look at their friends, I speak with them and so on, all to find out what's big for them. What's big
that's
for them.
That's a really good way to define it, because obviously if God is the only thing that's big in your head, then that you know, that fixes all levels of immaturity right there and then. If only we had the strength to just make that leap of faith, even though it's not a leap of faith, because you've intellectually come to the conclusion that, you know, that's the reality. And yet there's so much baggage that we hold on to. There's so many things that are big in our heads.
I remember this story. I forgot the name of this brother. I think he's famous, or relatively famous enough. You know, there is this book, 3 Minutes Until the Judgment Day.
Nope.
Right. It's some of these are essentially the experiences, close to death experiences, where a person goes into a coma or some sort of, a mental state where his soul is detached from the body, and then he goes through a few experiences, and they're actual real experiences because they see haqqaiq, they see the truth of this world. So I was listening to the story of this brother in his masjid, and he went to this coma. And he came back and he was discussing how that in that period he would be in the haram of Imam Hussein for all this time and see so many things. And then when he came back to this world after 2 months, he saw this world as a low state. He would beg God to take him away from this world. And then he would be like, what is this world? Why is this guy constructing such a big building? Why is this so important for him? Like he saw every single matter, like every single small molecule of this world to be immature. That's how he saw it, right?
Hey, do you know what? This world is the immature world. Yeah. If in one sense, if you look at it, it's the word dunya itself comes from adna, which means the lowest realm. But that is really remarkable that you'd describe the molecules, the very atoms of this world as immature.
That's how I perceive it. Like, or at least this brother who went to this state and came back. And when I think about it, that's how exactly it is. That's why Imam Ali, he says, "Kun fi dunyaka ka'annaka tu'ishu fihi abada." Live in this world as if you're going to stay here forever. Like, if something happens today, don't forget about it. There's tomorrow. Like, if something, like, for example, if you have to go to somewhere and you weren't able to make it, okay, not a big deal. But then, kun fi akhiratika ka'annaka yamutu ghada. Behave for your akhirah in a way that you're going to die tomorrow. Your salat best, pray it right now. You might die tomorrow. That should be trivial for you. God should be trivial for you. What's big for you? I think that's the criteria I'd use for trying to see whether someone is mature or immature. Let's take a break and we'll be back soon.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
We're back, and me and my brother Muzaffar, we're discussing about maturity. And we established the point that we test a person's maturity by seeing what's big for them. How do you approach this matter, Brother Muzaffar?
I think my definition is better than yours.
Oh, go ahead.
I don't.
So you're going to battle me? Yeah.
No, genuinely, I genuinely think your definition is better. Your kind of test for seeing if somebody's mature or not, that makes perfect sense. You'd see what's big in their eyes. When one thing that we encounter a lot, you're in the Islamic seminary, right?
I'm in
the Hawza too.
Yeah, I am.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've noticed a trend for anyone who studies a specific subject to believe that that subject is the best, it's the be-all and end-all of all things.
My brother is in the university studying medicine, and he finds it the same way, because there are people with different interests, and they kind of see the subjects that are related to their interests to be more important for them. An Islamic seminary, I think it's more opinionated. Mm-hmm. Why? Because the subjects are so different. You have usul and fiqh, probably a bit closer together, but what's the relation between usul and fiqh and falsafi?
Yeah.
Philosophy, Islamic philosophy is a completely different arena on its own.
See, okay, so if somebody is taking a single subject and saying this is the most important thing and other subjects are not important, that's what I'm getting at here.
Oh.
Right? Other subjects are not important. I'd say that that is another way to see that this is an immature approach. And that's something that you see in all facets of society, universities totally.
Yeah, that's
I just want to say this really funny sketch, right? We're on the topic of immaturity and maturity, right? I might as well say it. So there's this dinner party, right? And this guy walks in and he's a brain surgeon. Really highly educated and stuff. So hi there, what do you do? And then the guy says, oh yeah, I'm a banker. And then he goes, well, that's nice. It's not rocket science though, is it? Right? Do you know the phrase, it's not rocket science, right? You, when somebody is studying a certain subject, you say it's not rocket science. It means that it's not that heavy sort of a subject, right? So then another person comes up and then he goes, what do you do? And then he goes, I'm a mechanical engineer. And then he goes, that's nice. It's not rocket science though. And then the third person comes and he says the same thing to him. And then another guy comes in and then he goes up to him and says, what do you do?
Rocket science.
And he says, I do rocket science, right?
I just knew where this was going to.
And then he's just stumped. He doesn't know what to say anymore. Like, right?
Yeah, that is exactly rocket science. What do you do?
And then he says, what do you do? And then he goes, brain surgery. And he goes, oh.
That's not rocket science. I love this story.
This is where maturity in a lot of people's minds is defined by your education. And that's not necessarily the case. You can be highly, quote-unquote, educated and still be immature as hell.
You wouldn't be surprised finding people having 6 degrees, doctorate and whatnot, and still bowing down in front of an idol.
You can, on the opposite end of the scale, you can find people who don't have that much of education, but they're really mature people.
Oh, yeah.
They're really down-to-earth people at the same time. I want to tell you a story of Einstein.
Go ahead.
I know the controversy surrounding him and everything, right? But I heard this really cool story, right? And there is an element of Einstein that I really do like, because he's like the stereotypical kind of genius. Of guy. That
with his beard and his hair. Yeah.
So in Islam, when we gain knowledge, we're supposed to not consider ourselves bigger or be self-exultant.
Yeah.
This is a guy who is like considered as one of the top scientists of his age, and he'd just be riding around on a bicycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, isn't that crazy? So anyway, he's got a driver to take him to this big university where he's going to be lecturing and stuff to all these upper-class scientists. And he tells the driver to switch places with him. And he says, I'll drive, you sit in the back. And if anybody comes and sits with you, you tell them that your name's Einstein.
Oh, lovely.
So Einstein's driving the car, right? And his driver's in the back seat. So then one of these scholars, he comes in and he sits down. Einstein, it's so glad to finally meet you. They didn't have that many photographs. So he's seeing him for the first time. He's like, you're Einstein. Oh, my God, I've read all your books and everything. And then he asks him a really, really difficult question. And then the driver says, huh, that's so easy, even my driver can answer it. So Einstein answers it, and he's actually in the driver's seat, and then, he's flabbergasted. But my point is that for me is, it would seem like it's actually immature. Am I correct?
Yeah.
To some people, that would seem immature. He's switching places with his driver. But actually,
that's the most mature thing. Yeah, that's the most mature thing.
It goes back to Bahlul.
Humbleness, exactly.
Bahlul had such a high level of education. He was like,
that's when you get to know your responsibility and you fulfill that responsibility, no matter how people perceive you. I think that's like one of the biggest level of maturity. Let's talk about the qualities of someone who's mature. Would a person mature take things personally or not?
I want to say no.
Yeah. I remember the story of Imam Ali.